And good Friday morning. It's Friday, November 30th. Oh my goodness, the last day of November 2018, 14 minutes past the hour. And you're tuned into Over the Back Fence with Pastor Steve Whitaker and myself, Scott Spears. Pastor, here we are, last day of November, and the temperatures are up a little bit.
Yeah, can you believe it? Not that it's the temperatures are up. I'm glad to see that. But they're not up too much, by the way. I just came in a while ago. And I'll tell you, to be honest with you, Scott, I don't know, over these next few months, we might have to do it like through the window, because over the fence might get a little bit chilly.
Over the fence in Ohio in the winter can be rough. Yes, it absolutely can.
Yeah, having a great morning. It was foggy ride in this morning. I know that almost all the schools were on a two-hour delay, and North Union and Marysville actually closed their schools for the day. Really, really foggy out. So please, I know there's still some fog out there. Please be careful when you're driving, and keep an eye out for those deer running everywhere, because we still are in the middle of gun season for a few more days, and deer are a lot more active than they normally are.
And it was a thick fog too. You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't live out in the country, but I live in a more open area than the city. And it's funny, because even though it's a 10-minute drive for me to get here, when I pulled out of my garage this morning, man, you could not see anything. But as you get into the city, you can see better because of the houses and things of that nature. So if you didn't think it was foggy out in, let's say, the River Valley District or the Pleasant District or the North Union District, you get in those areas, it was awfully foggy this morning.
Yeah, it really, really was. Well, you know, speaking of fog, getting to be that time of year when some of us are in a little bit of a fog because we don't know what to do next. You've got Christmas to buy, and you've got, you know, Thanksgiving is past. We had a great Thanksgiving, a lot to be thankful for. And now here we are rolling into this Christmas season, and people are all, you know, concerned about gifts. They're concerned about family. I think sometimes family is a bigger stressor than even buying gifts.
You know, it's interesting. I caught your show on Tuesday, The Pastor Spot, 5:10 to 6 p.m. And that show, by the way, if you didn't hear it, will replay this coming Sunday morning, 8:10 to 9 a.m. But I caught it this past week, usually do, but found a very interesting conversation you were having with Terry Tackett, your co-host on that show, about gift cards versus gifts.
Yes.
And Terry and I have had this for 5 years now, ongoing thing about he buys gift cards and I buy gifts. Now, here's the reason for that, because I think Terry was fully explaining it, but I just want to put a little more cement on this. For me, the reason is there are two things. I think Terry might spend more money than I do, because gift cards are in a certain denomination of money, and you're going to spend that much, and there you go. My thinking is it's not to get off. I don't even want to get into the financial value of it, but it's not about spending more money. For me, it's about make something for the I'd be perfectly fine with that. I learned a few years ago how to make snow globes.
Oh, and, did you really?
Yes, and I like to do that. And not just Christmas-themed snow globe, a snow globe where you can put something that's representative. Like today on the station, we're going to give away some Elvis stuff, and I'll take a picture of Elvis, and I'll put it in the snow globe, and they can leave it out all year round. Now, that is less than a $10 gift card to anybody for me to manufacture. But the reason I am that way over gift cards, or buying a gift, if you want to go to the store and buy a gift, that's fine too, because I do believe in the idea it's the thought that counts. And I'm not sure how much thought goes into a gift card.
Mm-hmm.
That's my stance on the whole. Now, if somebody wants a gift card, if that's what they come and tell me, okay. You know, if I can make it happen, that's fine. But I don't think it goes back to my college days. I worked in a shoe store, and there was an older lady who was working there when I worked there. And the first Christmas I worked there, she crocheted me a Santa Claus or a Frosty the Snowman Christmas ornament. And I still put that on my tree every year.
And it reminds you of her.
And it reminds every time I see it.
We've gotten away from so much of that. You know, early, my mother had Christmas presents from her father that, matter of fact, I still have a chair that my grandfather made my mom when she was probably about a year and a half or two. It has etched into the top of the thing is 1932, which was 1932 was when she was born. But he actually, they had no money. It was during the Depression. And Delaware, which it still has, had the Union hoe and fork handle company over there on the east side of Delaware. And he actually went over there and got scraps. And he made chairs for his kids. And there's that chair. It's sitting in my house now some 70, 80 years later, a little more than that, 82 or 3 years later. Those gifts are very, very, very important.
I'll tell you something I found this year. My grandmother, when I was young, and I'm talking, elementary school age, I had made, because you always did arts and crafts in school at Christmas time, and I had made this green star Christmas ornament. And I gave it to her way back when. Well, that thing recently turned back up. She had kept it and put it on her tree every year. And, I don't go and inspect people's trees, so I didn't know if it was there or not. But this year, I saw it again for the first time in many, many years. And this thing is rather old now. And but she kept it, and I knew exactly what it was when I saw it. It took me back, many, many years. More than two decades.
My wife has a snow globe that she made in the first grade that is made out of a baby food jar. Believe it or not, it's still got water in it.
Yeah.
Kind of cloudy, but it's still there. I have an ornament on my tree that our Aunt Sharon made. Kind of funny. She made these little round ornaments, and she had needle pointed the inside of them and put each one of our kids' names and gave them to my mother at Christmas time. Well, my mother, thinking that they were for all of her kids, gave them to her kids at Christmas. And my aunt came and found out that she'd given them all away, but her intent was for my mom to put them all on her tree. Well, subsequently, we all have them all on our trees. And mine's been on my tree for years.
Well, and I'll tell you, these ideas can be simple because I hear a lot of people saying, well, I'm not very crafty, and I'm not very crafty. Snow globes are just something I happen to pick up. But I've known people, and I thought this was a great idea. They'll go out this time of year, and they'll get a Christmas puzzle. And they'll put the puzzle together, which you don't really have to be a crafty person to do that. And then they'll mount the puzzle in a picture frame. And it has maybe a Christmas theme or something of that nature. And they'll give that to the... I think that's a great gift at Christmas.
That's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
One year, one of the most best memories I have, and I have pictures of it actually, is when my son Matthew was probably about 4 or 5, I went out and bought a muzzle-loading shotgun kit, and we sat there and we sanded on it and we put that thing together, and we have pictures of it, and we're both wearing the same colored flannel shirts, and those are treasures. They truly, truly are.
Well, and this, to me, is Christmas because I am a firm believer, as you get older, that you do enjoy giving more than receiving. I know now I do. I mean, if somebody gets me something, I mean, you're always gracious about it, and maybe you do like the gift. Hey, this is something I'll use. I really like it. But it's not the same feeling you get when you give somebody something. So there, it kind of reminds me, which I'm sure you've been in this situation, when you go out to dinner with somebody or you go out to breakfast or something, and the check comes, and somebody wants to pick up the check, and they go, "Boop, I want to," and then don't do that, and then there becomes this long conversation. What I have learned to do, my rule now is, whoever says it first, I'm not going to fight you on it. Because
just graciously say thank you.
Thank you so much, and I'll get you next time. And I've learned to do that because that argument, and I understand why I was having it with people, because I don't want them to buy my lunch. I can buy my lunch. But maybe it makes them feel good to do that.
It's kind of funny, Scott. A rule that is good to live by is don't ever steal someone else's joy.
Yes, good rule.
Don't ever steal someone else's joy. If someone is doing something for you out of the goodness of their heart and it gives them joy to do it, don't rob them of that. It's the same thing with gift giving. You know, I don't care if you get a gift that is the worst thing you ever got. You know, you need to receive it with a smile and thank you so much for what, especially if someone makes you something. You know, I know a lot of ladies that, specifically a couple, my mother was one of them, that knit a lot. And they'll knit a sweater or something for somebody. You know, the worst thing you could ever do is say, "Oh, Grandma, will I wear this?" You know, come on, you're stealing someone's joy. Don't do that. But you know, when the wise men came and brought those gifts to a young Jesus, which, by the way, I'm going to give the answer to our trivia question the other night, being no one called it and gave it. Do you know what it is?
You know, I did. I was going to Google it, and I thought, but I don't know the answer.
He was about 2 years old.
Really? Yes, that young?
Was. Yeah. I know all of our manger scenes have a baby in a manger, and it's like Mary gave birth, and the next morning they showed up.
Right.
Well, they saw the star when he was born, but these guys were a long ways away, and they don't fly planes. They're on camels. But anyway, by the time they got there, he was about 2 years old, and they brought gifts. And gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and which was I had mentioned on the show the other night why I didn't think gift cards were bad, because they brought Jesus gifts that were needed. Mary and Joseph were going to have to flee to Egypt, and they would have no way to take care of themselves, no way to those next few couple years. So they had that to use to sustain them until it was safe for them. They had to wait till Herod was gone, because Herod sought to kill Jesus, and as he did, he gave the order to kill all the young boys in Bethlehem, and that's why he said from a toddler down, not just because he wanted to make sure he got him in that window. But a lot of times people think that was thousands of babies too, but understand Bethlehem wasn't very big.
No.
So one baby would have been enough, bad enough, but I don't think there were thousands. But anyway, so it was a rough couple years for Mary and Joseph. And, you know, these things are historically true. You know, a lot of people don't want to believe the Bible. And what I really find interesting is that especially recently, you know, scientists are coming up with things and they're scratching their head, because so many things are confirming so many biblical accounts, or at least leaning that way, that they're thinking, wow, we got to rethink A, B, and C. Well, as a person that has studied Scripture most of my life now, I'm getting old enough I can actually say that, but the truth of it just blows my mind, and the accuracy of it just, if people ever would stop and really look at it, it would be... it's intriguing. It really is. But Christmas time is a time that we celebrate Jesus. It is not a time, you know, it's not a time that's mandated in the Bible. That is a time that we have chose to make a date in which to do that. But the truth is that we should celebrate Christ's birth, death, and resurrection every day of the week. So if for Christians, it should be an everyday thing.
You know, it's interesting. Yesterday, one of our trivia questions was, what percentage of people consider Christmas a cultural celebration, which not a religious significance? And it's not a high number, because we do go around sometime, and I think we get in this thing where we think that it's more about the presents, and it's more about reindeer and so on and so forth, but the number that this poll represented was the cultural celebration is still very much in the minority. In 2018, people still see it as a religious holiday, more than the majority of people, and the most popular Christmas song is Silent Night.
Well, we sing it in our Christmas Eve service. And, you know, Terry and I were talking about that last Tuesday also, about the C&E Christians, the Christmas and Easter people that come, and that's when they attend church. Yeah. But on Christmas Eve, I mean, to kind of support what you're saying, There are so many people that come that I know don't go anywhere the rest of the year, and they don't attend our church, but they will come to a Christmas Eve service. One thing I need to bring up, though, that's really important, I had announced that we were doing a live nativity scene tonight and tomorrow morning. Due to the weather that we're see coming in, which is nothing but sopping, cold, nasty rain, that has been canceled. Now, we may, if we have time, get out there and reschedule it and do it again, because we've got a lot of time between now and Christmas, a lot of busy time, but a lot of time. But you know, it's just not to bring the animals out and to bring people out and then not have a time when people really want to come out and enjoy it wouldn't be the best use of our time. And I'm sure that we've got plenty to do. Scott, I'll tell you, we've got you saw the picture of those stockings.
I did.
You like that?
I did.
You know, you asked that question. I said I was going to check. I was going to share, but I didn't know how to get it on there.
Yeah.
So you have to help me with that.
Yeah, I'll work on that.
Anyway, did you see it?
I did see it.
So you can do that. I just don't know how to get on there. But no, we had the FCA kids come out on Wednesday, and they came out with our youth group, and they packed stockings up that our school has a program where we help kids that are may not have a lot on the weekend, and we pack lunches for the district, and right now it's up to about $264 a week, which when I leave here today I'll have to be taking those in. But we decided this year that we would give each one of those kids a stocking also. So you know, with things in it like, you know, the typical things in it that you'd see in a stocking. And, of course, there's also the story of Christ's love for these children. And so these kids came out and they packed those. So we have 264 stockings stuffed. And that's a lot, you know, it really is. But that's fun. And so those are some of the things we've been doing. A lot of local organizations have stepped up to help with our Christmas giveaway drive that we do with for families, and we actually had somebody step up and donate all of our turkeys this year. And what a blessing that is. And it's a fellow that down by Radnor that actually raises turkeys for people to buy them over the holiday season, and every year he does this. And so this year we received all those fresh turkeys from him. They're frozen now, though, but fresh turkeys so that we can send those out with our meals. And what a blessing that is, but it keeps the church busy. Tomorrow morning, and I will mention this to anybody that would like to come, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock at Community Christian Fellowship at 209 East Water, we will have men's breakfast. We do that once a month. And breakfast is great, by the way. And following men's breakfast, we're going to be decorating the church. And that's always fun. Our church decorates a little different than some churches. I believe there's a lot of kids out there that don't always see a lot. And if our church can be a place that they come into and see the excitement and joy of Christmas, not only is there things pertaining to Bethlehem, but you're also going to see a lot of decorations, a lot of trees and wreaths. And we have numerous trees that go up in our church decorated. And that I think it's great. Again, it's a wonderful thing to show that love and caring. We're not being sacrilegious out there. But, you know, I do believe the two can take place hand in hand. And that's what we do. So we have a great time.
Well, you know, that's been the long-term quandary of Christmas. And I'm not even sure why it's a quandary, because St. Nicholas is a saint. I mean, he was a good man. He did good things. And Christmas trees do make people happy. I mean, if you are having some kind of depression problem or having some kind of down area, one thing they'll tell you to do is try to lighten up where you are. So if somebody wants to put up a Christmas tree or a wreath or do that along with all of the other things that also make them very happy, the religious significance of Christmas, I'm not sure why they can't go hand in hand.
You know, my wife and I always joke, why can't we just leave this up all year? My wife is loves snow globes and always has. And she has Christmas snow globes that are just amazing, some of them. And she even has one that has a little train going around a track on it. She has so many of these things. And in our house that we just moved from, I actually built a 6-inch wide shelf that went around the top of the the living room and the kitchen for her to display these villages and houses and stuff on, and she puts lights through all of them. We've had to do something a little different with the move. Now most of them are in display cases with lights on them. But she does that, and then, she, like I said, she has snow globes and villages, and we decorate, and it's just such a great feeling. Mm. I mean, we sit there at night, and we turn the lights down, and we turn the tree on and the lights on in the house, and we just relax and enjoy the time. Sometimes we'll watch we're on about our third round of the whole Hallmark Christmas movies, but they're still good, and they make you feel good. They're feel good things, and you know, I sit there and read the Bible or have good discussions, whatever. But it's a time to relax and enjoy. And if you've got a problem with that, then I think you might have a problem.
Yeah, you might. You might. That's a good way to put it, because I've done the same thing since I put the tree up and the decorations up. When the sun goes down, it's very nice and peaceful, and it does give you a good feeling to sit there in a room with all these things on, and they're just enough light to brighten up the room a little bit, not like having a regular light on. And I think it gives it a whole mystique, and I think that's why this season is special. You know, the interesting thing to me about Christmas is, no matter how you look at it, most people do get a special feeling at Christmas.
I hope they do.
I think most do.
I really hope they do. You know, and it's kind of funny. We have what do they call them? That you put the drops in with the water in your room to, not humidifier, but like for the essential oils.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Diffuser.
Yeah.
We've got one in our bedroom that has different colors you can set on it. My wife has it set on red right now. It's a soft red. And I've got one of those lights out in front of the yard that put the snowflakes, you know, shine it on the house. Well, it also shines it in my bedroom window on the ceiling. So I even go to bed with this stuff around me.
Correct.
And, you know, I've got to be honest with you, it's comforting.
It is. It is. And I think it puts a lot of people back into a place from their childhood, because there is something that reminds people of their childhood. It this time of year brings up very strong feelings, kind of like back to school time. When kids are going back to school, I always see a lot of parents saying, "Boy, I remember that. Boy, I remember when I went back to school." And a lot of kids take a lot of parents take their kids back to schools that they went to when they were young. And they go in and, you know, they say, "Oh, the hallway smells the same, just like when I was here." And the kids are all lined up in the hallway and getting ready to go in and meet the teacher. And the teachers are already there and they've got things ready for the students. And it's really a fascinating thing, because I think big events trigger strong emotions. Birthdays, first day of school, and Christmas is without a doubt in there. And I don't know why so many people criticize how people celebrate. I don't think anybody is trying to celebrate in a way to tick people off. So when people do get angry in the way people celebrate, I think, you know, I'm not even sure what brings that on.
Let me ask you a question. If you were going to be disappointed in people being angry with you for the way you celebrate, don't be angry with them. You know, you're right. You know, one thing about America that's wonderfully, it's beautifully made and beautifully designed. I don't know what the rest of you think out there, but I think that our founding fathers were so guided and did such a wonderful job of this masterpiece. We've lived in a free country for 200 years, and there's not many places that can say that. And it has been the core of our Constitution is liberty, freedom, and mutual respect for others. And I know even people will say, I know one of the things that is really attacking our founding fathers right now is the fact that they didn't abolish slavery in the Constitution. But what people have to understand is, because it was so divisive at that time, that they probably wouldn't have got it ratified if they did it at the initial writing. But yet at the same time, within 70 years, it was outlawed in this country, and we went to war over it. For a practice that had taken place since the beginning of man, I think we did a pretty daggone good job of getting on that program. But if that's your only reason for disliking the Founding Fathers, look at the other things they did. And one of those things in those freedoms that it gives us, you know, I'm not Catholic. I'm not Roman Catholic. But I live in a country where I need to respect the rights of the Roman Catholic to worship as they do. I'm not Jewish. I'm not Mormon. I'm a Christian. And I expect people to respect my right to worship as I should. And a lot of times, tolerance is simply that. Tolerance is something that we may not agree with you, but we're not going to impede your right to do it. That's what tolerance is. You know, you have the right to do it. It doesn't mean I have to agree with you. And, you know, unfortunately, we seem to be leaning lately in our country that if you tolerate something, it means that you have to agree with the holy and accept it. And that's not what it means. That's changing the meaning of tolerance. You know, it's something as simple as, to tolerate another person. It doesn't mean that, you know, hey, I'm right on board with them and everything they do. It means that, you know what, there's some things about them that may be totally contrary and foreign to where I want to be or how I want to be, but I'm going to tolerate their behavior because, you know, they have a right to act that way as well as I have a right to act how I'm going to. And, you know, this thing of constantly going back and forth and trying to go after different groups to, look, I should have a right as an American to raise my family the way I believe. And you should have a right as an American to raise your family the way you believe. Now, as long as there aren't, you know, things that are grossly obscene or contrary to anything that we believe in as Americans, leave people alone. If you want to change how they are, change them with your heart. Does that make sense? I mean, if you want to persuade someone, give them a reason to change. You don't do that with hate.
Well, this is why I do not understand negative... I don't understand criticism, really, to a great degree. I really don't understand it because if the time it takes to dislike somebody, the time it takes to call somebody a name, the time it takes to run somebody down, my reaction to that always is, well, why? What brought that on? Because something has to trigger that. And people will say, well, it's this. Well, is it really that? I don't know. I firmly do believe that people who try to hurt other people with no motive.
Personally.
With no motive, I think they're hurting themselves. And I've always believed that. So I really have never taken anything. If anybody's ever said anything negative about me, I really don't take it personally. People find that hard to believe, but I don't. I don't even really think about it a whole lot. But since we're having this conversation, I think about it. And I think, I always just think how unhappy they must be.
I agree. And, you know, it's interesting. We talk about that. It's important, I think, that we speak up for who we are and what we believe as a nation and as people within the nation. I'll give you a good example. If people have forgotten what communism has done to a country, I have no problem posting something that shows just how bad it has been. Like, ring a bell. Hey, you remember this? You know, 80 years ago, what happened in Germany? Let's be careful here with where we go. I have no problem with that. That's not personally attacking a particular person in that way. But, you know, I think that we can care about people, desire for them to change, and just be honest with ourselves about how we want to be treated. You know, don't go to the jugular on people that firmly believe one way. I feel bad for someone that may be really way out of kilter and somewhere something's caused them to latch onto that and hang on to it. And a lot of times it's things that's motivated by a past hurt. It's motivated by a personal situation. You don't know that situation.
That's true.
I mean, you really don't. And it's so easy to – I think sometimes we go a little overboard with getting our feelings hurt a little too easy. And we got to be careful there, too. I mean, not everything is meant to rip somebody down. When you see a bunch of us or hear a bunch of us guys together, we rip each other to pieces. And it's all in jest, and we love each other dearly. And there may be just a tad of an element of truth to everything we're saying, but we've learned that we care about each other, and we just jab at each other. And I think in America, people did that for years. I think that we've gotten almost too sensitive. And you know what I think brings on a lot of that? I think a lot of it is we're too isolated. People are spending so much time on electronic media and so much time in their own little cubbyhole, in their own little space. And when you get out in the world and you hustle and bustle and rub elbows with people, you're going to develop the character of interaction. I remember I was sitting on the front porch with, I think I was the third old geezer sitting there a few years ago on a porch swing. But we're not really old geezers. A couple of them were pretty old. I think they're all living, though. Anyway, we're on this guy's porch swing on his front porch, just talking. It's middle of an afternoon in the summer. And this teenager comes walking down the sidewalk. And I don't know if it was me or one of the other guys, says, good afternoon, you having a good day? And the kid turned around, looked white as a sheet, and didn't know what to say and kept walking. He didn't know how to communicate with us. And it freaked him out that these middle-aged or older men were even speaking to him. Now, that's an issue. That's a problem in our country today. We're not getting that interaction. And even the children, I think, are beginning to realize it. I told you about the thing we had at the school, mm-hmm. the Great Shake, the Amazing Shake, where you walk up, shake their hand, and they start, you know, whatever. And we did the president thing, where they had to be the president. And we asked, one of the questions was, you know, what do you think of modern communication and media? Is it gone too far, or is it... we were speaking about technology, and I was just blown away how many of these kids said, well, I believe that technology is fine as long as you don't take it too far. Like, we really need to limit the time that we're on our computers and our phones and learn to interact with people more. And I'm thinking, now these kids weren't coached, and this is coming truthfully from them. Even they're realizing it. Hey, Mom and Dad, you can do something this year for Christmas that's real important. Don't get your kids another $300, $400 cell phone. Folks, they don't need it. They really don't. I really, really wish the schools would limit the use of cell phones more than they actually do. I've seen what kids do and the stuff they pull up and the stuff they save. You say, well, they can't get on the internet anyway. Well, they can save something to their phone they looked at last night, can't they? And, you know, it's those kind of things. And pay attention in school. You know, I never had a phone. My parents never, ever had trouble getting a hold of me. Think about that. And that's the biggest excuse, parents. Well, I need to get a hold of my child. Well, fine. It was an after-school activity. That phone doesn't come on until that bell rings. Any other time, they can call the school, can you get my child out of class?
You know? Well, you know, I think that comes from a generation of very nervous people. I think there's a nervous nature that drives that where's my child, what are they doing? And I'm not sure that that breeds the best outcome, because then I think the child feels encumbered upon, and they maybe end up acting out so they can get away from being monitored all the child. Monitored all the time. There was a conversation we had on the station not too long ago about people who put GPS on their family members' cars, so they always know where they are.
And, oh man, I don't go for that.
No, well, my question was, because the connotation in that is they're doing something wrong, and I'll know where they are at all times. And I thought, if you were doing something wrong, and you know your car has GPS, would you take your car? Wouldn't you just park your car and...
There's always been ways around it.
Right.
So my friend's dad used to write down his mileage. All he did was reach up under the dash and unscrew the odometer while we cruised around. When we got back, he screwed it back in.
Right.
So back then, if you want to do something, if there's a will, there's a way. If the will's to do wrong, they're going to figure out a way to do wrong. Park the car and go with another kid. You know, all those kind of things. But I don't want to give you kids ideas out there. But, you know, at the same time, I think in society we've done this. You know, it's been about, I suppose it's been more than a decade ago anyway. I needed some extra money and to pay some things off. And I took a night job. I took a night job at Jegg's in Delaware.
Yeah.
And on working on the packaging line, shipping line. And it was rushed work, and it kept you hopping. But I was doing a very, very good job. And I really – it was good. It was fine with me for what it was. I had never done a mindless job. It's not really mindless, but you know what I mean, repetitive stuff like that. But I found out one day that the owner, vice president of the company, whatever, not Jegg Sr., but one of the other boys, had a security camera or a camera at every station in that place, and he could sit at home and flip his TV remote and watch me work. And I felt so violated by that. Not that I was going to do anything wrong or steal or anything like that, because I wasn't. I felt so violated by that, I quit. And I should have felt violated. You think about it. You know, why? What happened to trust in this world? I realize that people aren't always trustworthy, but have hands-on enough with people. We've got to start communicating more. Now, my one thing I told my kids, and I held them to this, was I want you to understand something. When you go spend a night at a friend's or telling me you're doing A, B, or C, you never know when I will show up, so I trust you're going to be there. And that was just me just letting them know, look, remember, you got to be honest with me. But I would never consider putting a GPS on. They do that in so many businesses now. Most of the businesses you have that require anyone to have a car now have GPS, so they know where you're at all the time. What have we turned into in this country?
Well, it's interesting. The conversation we started out early this morning before we came on air was people are always more apt to believe the bad than the good. If you hear something bad about somebody, that's got to be true. It's got to be true. But if you hear something good, you may not even talk about it, and you may not even believe that it's true. And that's a weird problem that has come about in society, because we even do it with people who we know. We say, well, yep, they must have done it. We have no proof of this. You know, I think right now, and I'm certainly not saying they're innocent, but I think it's very interesting that this Pike County murder case that happened 2 years ago, I certainly think it's interesting that the family that has now been accused of it and is indicted this week all pled not guilty. Now, are they not guilty? I don't know. And that's what I would say now. I don't know.
Could it be? It could be.
Right. And I would hate to think that with all the news coverage on that case that we've already convicted them in our minds. And what I was talking to a lady the other night who brought this up to me, and I hadn't thought about it, but everybody knows about this case because it happened 2 years ago in Ohio. Everybody knows they've been arrested because that was a big story. How are you going to find a jury who knows nothing about that case?
You can't.
Right.
You cannot. So not even outside of the area.
So how can you get a fair shake?
You can't. And that's something that really needs to look at. You know, they used to not allow cameras in courtrooms. And the media, in this country, we are not allowed to squelch the media.
Well, and I feel, I honestly, but this might sound odd, but I have right now. Now, if they did the murdering, I don't have sympathy for them. I feel that it was a pretty horrible murder. Murders. But I don't know that they did it yet. I have not seen the evidence that they did it. If you present that evidence, okay, I'll go along with it. Like I said, I'm one of those people. When the final thing comes down, then whatever it is, whatever my belief going in was, I'll believe it. Because I gotta at some point believe something.
But you know, Scott, one thing I from working with you I've known is you've got some real journalistic integrity. And the problem that I see today in a lot of cases, and even with the news, is it's so much about ratings. And it's so money-driven that there's not that journalistic integrity. And they will expose things. I mean, if they find out something that is even going to throw a wrench in the prosecution of the case or in the freedom of the case, you know, that needs to be left alone, they'll just bring it out. And you know, at some point, you've got to say, wait a minute, I've got to have a little bit of integrity. You know, our legal system has to operate. We need to let this go. But they don't. And it's always about the next shock value, the next thing. And many times they get it wrong. They really do.
Oh, sure.
And then they have to come back and they don't recant all that often. But the point is that, yeah, that they really, really do get it wrong.
Well, and time usually tells the story on those things. Because the generation that was covering or around when these things were happening, eventually that becomes the older generation. And the new generation that comes in who had no skin in that fight looks at it with a new lens. And
I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, too, and I know people that will not do a print interview. And that's kind of interesting because, or a taped interview, a television interview. Nice thing about us sitting here, you know, you're not going to mess up a live interview.
It's now.
It's now. And I know even locally, I know people that have been interviewed for stories and are just furious when the story comes out. Because when the story comes out, there's been things not added, but eliminated or put with other things out of context to fit the slant of whoever was reporting the story. And that's not right. If you're going to interview me and I'm going to say A, B, C, D, E, don't put in there A, E. You know what I mean? And make sure that everything has continuity and the proper truth to it. And it does happen. It happens in newspapers. The editing on television is insane. I mean, I could say to you, Scott, you could tell me a funny joke, and I'd say, are you crazy? And just start laughing. Well, if you edit, the only thing you get is, are you crazy? And then you take another block of you saying something that I might not agree with, and I come after that. All of a sudden, I'm attacking you. And these are the kind of things that happen, and it gets old.
Well, and I also feel bad for all people going through hard times, because I would assume when you are being accused of something on that high a level, it must be very difficult. Very difficult. And, you know, stress is the number one killer in the United States. It's a yin and a yang type of situation. Because if the crime was committed by the people, then they should have to face the consequences of that crime. But if they weren't, the stress of it has to be horrible, horrible.
You know, Scott, I've always been a person that's been very active in communities and out around me, and even on a younger person in somewhat of a political sense. One thing I learned a long time ago, there's a lot of people that never see jail and are never prosecuted because of who they associate with, the money they have in their connections.
Well, that's true. No doubt about it.
And so my thinking is, you've got some guy that's convicted. Did he do a crime? Yes. Should he be punished? Sure, he should. But you know those people that slid through the conviction, slid through the indictment, slid through those. We need to have a little more compassion for those that can't and don't. And I think that, you know, we should be focusing more on rehabilitation and giving people hope versus, well, you're a criminal and you're not. Well, yes, you are a criminal. You've just never been called on the carpet for it.
Well, you know what I also want to know is, and this is a big topic to cover in 2 minutes, but one of the big things I don't understand is why people feel the need. I'll give you a good – I'm trying to come up with an example without naming any certain situation. But let's talk about a case that's white collar. Okay, now, there have been many white-collar cases that I have seen come to trial recently. And the one thing that always interests me about those cases is, is that the person who did the thing that they're saying they did ends up usually with some kind of jail time, or they have to pay back the money, or they get a felony. You know, it hurts their life in a lot of ways. But the one thing they never do is go back to the person who made the accusation, because sometimes the accusation that got all stirred into this is not what the crime was. I'd love to see the people who make these accusations with no evidence have to face a day themselves, and I think a lot more people would think about it.
I completely agree with that, because you can destroy someone. I know a lot of people, we're running out of time.
It's a good show today. But a lot of people,
Six on Your Side's always been popular. But I used to be a contractor, and coming from a contractor standpoint, I could see sometimes where the contractor was really getting...
Sure.
You know how many contractors get burnt constantly by people looking for a freebie that never intended to pay in the beginning? Kind of tough.
It is kind of tough. Now, well, you know what? Let's take the call here before we go off the air. Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, are you guys still doing the contest for the tickets for the zoo?
Yes, we didn't give any. We should have done some tickets this morning. We ran out of time, Pastor.
Well, we can ask her one quick question.
Yeah.
What day is Christmas?
December the 25th.
She's right.
She went. What's your name?
Heidi.
Heidi, okay. Heidi, do you know where we're located?
I do.
All right. You will have two tickets to the Columbus Zoo. That's what you wanted?
Yeah.
All right. You got it,
and,
Heidi.
And Heidi, I'd like to invite you to our church at 209 East Water Street. We're Community Christian Fellowship, and we have a Christmas Eve service. Love to see you come.
Okay. Can I pick those tickets up today?
Yes, you can.
Okay. What time are you there?
We're here till 3.
Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. Bye-bye.
God bless everyone. Have a wonderful week, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
He's loaded lots of toys and blue sleigh, and every